Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Barry Cronin and Tyler Rocky.
Welcome in. It's the CDGA Golf Show presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. I'm Tyler Rocky alongside Barry Cronin. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Let's welcome on in Kevin Streelman from the PGA Tour, and he is being inducted into the Illinois Junior Golf Association Hall of Fame. He joins us on the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. Good morning, Kevin, and congratulations.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Morning, Kevin. It's a real privilege to have you on, and we're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow out at Cantini.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Kevin, I know you were you grew up in the Wheaton area and started to play golf, et cetera. What does it mean to you now, and why is it important to you to be inducted into this Hall of Fame?
You know, it really is an honor. It brings back so many great memories just coming back here to Wheaton and seeing Cantini and Arrowhead, and I played Chicago Golf yesterday. And I mean, it's where I grew up. It's where I learned the game. It was me, mom, and dad just kind of walking public golf courses around the Chicagoland area. You know, whatever twilight rate we could get. We didn't have a ton of money, so we never were able to join anywhere, but we just loved the game. We'd play 3-4 nights a week in the summer, walk every time, and it's truly some of my favorite memories. So the Illinois Junior Golf Association afforded me the opportunity to start to practice, to start to compete. And that's where I fell in love with competition. And like I said, we couldn't really travel the country, play on the AJGA, and nor was I really good enough until I was like 16 or 17. So the IJGA is where it all started for me. So to be back for this is really an honor.
Kevin, when you live in Arizona now, you can play year-round. Does it ever amaze you that, hey, I did this, and hey, you can only really play golf in the Chicagoland area for what, 4 or 5 months out of the year?
You know, I honestly felt fortunate. We had a blast growing up in the Michael Jordan era. You know, basketball was a big part of my life during the winters. I fell in love with tennis also, so I'd play that in the spring. And golf was something, yeah, we did, you know, in the summer months and into the fall. And I think that helped me develop, though, as an athlete. Playing some team sports was good for your development as a person, as a human being. And then to play tennis, which is a game I still love today, and my son's really getting into now, is something I love to play also. So I think it afforded me the opportunity to not get burnt out. It allowed me to develop my skills and my body in a more athletic, well-rounded way. And I think most importantly, I wasn't burned out. I see some of these kids who play year round now, especially out in Arizona, and I think they have to do that to become the best in the planet. And I just don't think that's the case.
Yeah, there's the Tiger Woods way of Earl sitting him in the high chair at age two and watching Earl beat balls into the back of the garage, into a mattress or a net in the back of the garage. And I think a lot of parents think, hey, that's the road to greatness, yeah. And you're basically saying, you know, calm down.
Yeah, of course. No, my goal with my children is to raise great people and great citizens first. And it's not to try and beat a sport that they might not even fall in love with, you know, into them from birth. So if that were to happen later, you got to push that on your own quite a bit you know, just see what happens. But I tell people I didn't really get good at golf. I mean, like really good at golf until I was 25, 26. It took a few years of development on the mini tours and 4 years at a great university. But it wasn't until I kind of hit the road by myself on the mini tours where I said I either need to get really good at this or I need to find something else to do with my life. And fortunately, it's been a fun journey.
Right, and you were a caddy at Chicago Golf. You went to high school at Wheaton Warrenville South, where you guys had a really good team, obviously. And then you were recruited to play at Duke University, which is pretty darn prestigious. And the nice thing is you could play all year round pretty much out there in beautiful
yep.
North Carolina.
Yep. Yeah, that was a big part of me going there. By that time, I just was madly in love with the game of golf and wanted to get better. And Duke just afforded a great opportunity to get south of the Mason-Dixon there and play year round and also go to a great university, and we also had fun. It's just a really well balanced school to go to, and afforded me the opportunity to meet some great friends and start to really kind of figure this game out to a degree. You never really figured out, but kind of thought I did.
And you know, now the young players who come out of great schools and everything, they have a pathway to the PGA Tour through the through PGA Tour University now, and in prior to that, the Latino America Tour, the Canadian Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour, whatever we call it this week, Hogan Tour, Nike Tour. But in your era, you're sort of the Zach Johnson era, right? You're in your mid-40s now, and both of you, you had to go out. You played 6 years on the mini tours, which is, people who don't know what mini tours are, it's was the Hooters Tour, the Dakotas Tour, et cetera, and that's living out of your car, really.
Yeah, we were living out of our cars. It was, you know, you put the rack up in the back, and all your clothes would be hanging in the back of your car. The driver's, the passenger seat was pretty much your office. You put like your computer there, and actually, this was before the iPhones, and I had a Rand McNally Atlas, and you'd be flipping from North Dakota, then trying to get to South Dakota, trying to match up the highways of which one you're going to, and how do I get to Fargo? How do I get to Minot, North Dakota? I mean, it's just hilarious and great memories, and you know, staying at the cheapest hotels you could. If you had four guys in a room, like the best rounds of the day would get the beds, and the other guys had to sleep on the floor. You know, it was awesome. We didn't have a penny to our names, but we had a passion for the game, and a lot of great people helped us along the way. We stayed in people's extra bedrooms and stayed on their couches and barbecue in their backyards and drink some beer with them. And just like, it's just really been an incredible journey. Some of those dead broke mini tour days are some of my favorite moments of my life.
Kevin Streelman joining us here on the CDGA Golf Show on the Jersey Mike's hotline. So Kevin, you brought up everything that you had to go through to get to the PGA Tour, and it's a real grind of a life. What made it worth it for you to keep going as opposed to maybe bowing out and say, all right, I can go get something more stable somewhere else?
You know, a big moment was actually when I Monday qualified for the Western Open in 2004. And it was the week before I actually went for the assistant coaching job at Duke. And it came down to me and one other guy, Jim Kaczynski. And Jim ended up getting the job. And I was left here, you know, pretty much nothing. I was staying with my parents. I was 24, had tried 2 years of mini tours. It was terrible. And my dad gave me $400 to go try and Monday qualify for the Western Open out at Bolingbrook Golf Club. And I went around and shot a 67. And got like one of the last spots of the four spots. I think I finished fourth. And next day was playing with Mike Weir in a practice round out at Dubs Dread. And Mike had just won the Masters that year. And I watched him really intently. He was super kind to me and my buddy Paul, who was caddying for me. But watching how he hit it, I drove it longer than him. I've always been a great driver of the ball. I fit my irons nice. I looked at him as one of the best at the time, top five in the world. I was like, he's obviously an incredible putter and short game and great mind, but I think I can hang. Like, it was a big moment for me to understand that I was good enough if I put the work in the right places. I've never been afraid of working hard at the places I needed to work at and understanding my deficiencies or my strengths. And that was a big moment. Even though I missed the cut that week, and it was kind of back to the drawing board, but I knew I could do it if I had more of the opportunity, and some people along the way allowed me that opportunity, and I went out and did it. So that was, you know, getting that tour card at 27 in 2007, had my parents there, having a bunch of my sponsors there, having my fiance at the time, now wife Courtney there, like hugging them with just tears everywhere. Like, that was a really cool moment. But in a way, that was just the beginning too, because I didn't know if I could stay. And, you know, to now be finishing up my 15th straight season out there, it's just, I couldn't have dreamed that, you know, 15 years ago.
Right, and you went to Q school six times. You worked as a substitute teacher in the winters here. You'd go out to the Bensonville Golf Dome and the former Bensonville Golf Dome run by our buddy Mike Monroe.
Yeah, sure.
For all those years, you know, and stand there till Mike turned off the lights. And then you had a big year in 2008, your rookie year. Tell us about that, the Buick Open at Torrey Pines. What happened that year?
Well, it was only my third event as a member. I'd made the cut in Hawaii, which I was thrilled about because last place money there was more than I could ever make on a mini tour event. And then go to Palm Springs and miss the cut there. But then I go to Torrey and I'm like the last alternate in. I think it was fourth alternate. And I get in Thursday morning and I'm like, you're on the 10th tee of the South course in 12 minutes. So me and my caddy just start running. We get out there and I shoot like 69 on the South. And I go, I think 67 on the North course the next day. And I'm leading the golf tournament. Well, this is before, you know, early 2008, Tiger's number one in the world by a million. And we're just watching his name come up the leaderboard. And we end up tied. Either maybe I was up one or we were tied going into Saturday. But I knew I'd be in the final group, final pairing, final tee time with Tiger at Torrey Pines. And it was incredible. I mean, I didn't sleep hardly a wink that night. Neither did Courtney. I remember I was getting a movie, like renting a movie at 2 in the morning because we were wide awake. It was like we're sitting in a hotel room. So we wake up and play, and it was a really great experience. I mean, I watched Tiger shoot a 66. I think he won the tournament by 8. But I think I shot a 73 or 74, and I hit just a few kind of silly shots. But it was like probably the second most important moment of my professional career, just because it was I knew I could do it. Like it was important mentally and personally to have the confidence to know I belonged. And shooting it wasn't a great score, but it wasn't. I was in the toughest arena I could ever be in, and I hung in there, and I dealt with it mentally, I dealt with it physically, and I didn't freak out, like it was fine. And so everything since then, like Tampa and Travelers and the Masters, everything since then has seemed smaller than that day. And I'm very fortunate to have that opportunity, that professional experience as a rookie for free. Like that was something experience I couldn't be more thankful for.
And I think then you even later that year you were also at Torrey Pines where you led the tournament.
Yeah, I've had some fun ones at Torrey, but yeah, I shot a nice. I went 3 under the first round of the U.S. Open. Was leading the U.S. Open there a few months later. I wasn't leading it after the second round, but after the first round.
But it is remarkable that you've stayed on the tour ever since your rookie year 2008. A lot of guys lose their cards, et cetera, but you've been your consistency in keeping it. And I think you've been in every FedEx Cup playoff since they started.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my wife is thankful for that.
Kevin Streelman with us here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. So, Kevin, one of the hottest things in all of golf right now and the burning question for everyone. You know, I'm winding up for you here. I'm giving you a little time to think about it. But the LIV Tour and what it's done for golf, and it feels like we may be approaching a split in the road. What have you made of the LIV Tour, and have you been approached by LIV Golf?
I think I was ranked when they first started coming out a month ago, I was in near the top 50 in the world in rankings. And we all got emails, our agents did. And, I never responded nor was interested in it. I think it's probably the saddest thing I've seen in professional sports. It's obviously a real thing, and it's going to be here for at least a few years. You know, the scary thing, I'm sure, for those guys who have taken the money is if Mohammed bin Salim decides to pull the money in a few years, then they could be left hung out to dry. But I can't blame a young upcoming player for getting, you know, offered an obscene amount of money to go, you know, play in this kind of exhibition thing they're putting on. But I don't think it's real professional golf. I don't think it's a 54 hole shotgun start is not how golf courses are designed. It's not how tournaments are designed. It's not historical. It's not really relevant. There's some good players clearly that are deciding to go, but I think one day when they look back at their careers and talk to their children about what and why they did it, especially giving up Ryder Cup captaincies, I think they're going to be a little disappointed in their decision.
Very interesting, Kevin, we're supposed to have a tournament here. We're going to have a tournament here at Rich Harvest Farms in mid-September. It'll be a LIV Tour event, and, you know, they're selling tickets, and people, I guess, are going to go, And it'll be an interesting thing to see. I guess the real question is, if you're a younger guy, they're starting to, you know, as you know, you're in your early 40s, Kevin. You know how hard it is for the guys in their early 40s to compete with some of these young players that are coming out right now who hit it 10 miles and they're so much more well prepared, obviously, than you were than when you came out of college. These guys are winning at very young ages. I think, obviously, when you're in your 40s, like a Lee Westwood or a Stenson or whatever, you're not winning anymore. You're going to take that money. But now they're going to target younger players, obviously. The Cameron Smith is obviously on their list. All those guys are on their list. Like you said, the top 50 in the world. And probably the guys coming out of college, a Pearson Cootie. How does the PGA Tour keep those guys from going to live?
It's obviously kind of come down to the individual and where your, you know, beliefs are in yourself and where you want your legacy to be. And a lot of guys are, you know, the older guys are saying, well, it's so tough out there now. It's the guys are so good. Like, well, yeah, what do you think you signed up for? PGA Tour is the best golfers in the world. So, I mean, if you're not good enough to play on it anymore, then you're going to go, if you want to still play, go somewhere else. But just say you're doing it for the money. I mean, don't come up with all these trying to grow the game garbage and all these excuses that they're just trying to rationalize their decision to sell out for money. And if that's what you're going to do, that's fine. But also don't be surprised when the public and their peers, AKA us, A, don't welcome them back to the tour. And also, you know, they're going to look at your career in a different way, in a different light, because you took the money. So it's fine. I'm not losing any sleep over it. But you know what? The public's going to look at your career in a different way. So they're going to have to deal with that too.
Kevin, thanks so much for joining us here. Congratulations on your Hall of Fame induction, and enjoy the day tomorrow.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much, Kevin.
We'll see you tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Bye.
All right. Kevin Streelman, he is being inducted into the Illinois Junior Golf Association Hall of Fame, the inaugural class of that Hall of Fame. That's tomorrow at Cantini. When we come back, LIV Golf, is it making a threat outside of golf? We'll discuss all that when we return. The segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Tyler Rocky and Barry Cronin, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
The segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Tyler Aki and Barry Cronin with you here. It's the CDGA Golf Show. If you missed anything, including our interview we just had with Kevin Streelman, check it out on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcast, the CDGA Golf Show. So LIV Golf has taken over sort of the golf landscape. You've heard LIV Golf. You've become more familiar with what LIV Golf is. But it looks like they may be starting to spread their wings a little bit. Now, the domino started to fall earlier in the week when a one-time guest on this show, and I think now the first guest with LIV ties, David Faraday, is joining the LIV Golf broadcasts. And this is one of those things where this is probably outside of the players. This is the first major domino to fall outside of the physical jumping of players. You're getting one of the highest profile golf personalities to jump over to the LIV Tour, and he's going to leave NBC as a result of that, and he's going to get involved in some of these broadcasts, and it makes you start to think that there is some sort of broadcasting deal on the horizon for LIV Golf.
Well, I remember, well, when David Faraday left CBS, he had a very high profile gig. He was the man who was marching around on the golf course, oftentimes following Tiger Woods through his great years. And then he had this show on Golf Channel, which is owned by NBC. So NBC decided, I guess, that they needed to have him in their you know, whatever, in their with NBC, yeah, not CBS. So when he went to NBC, his profile as an announcer, to me, went way down. He didn't have to walk the golf course anymore, probably part of the deal. He's in his 60s now. And I thought that his profile at NBC really diminished, whereas his personality came out a lot on CBS. And I think from a career standpoint, I think he went downhill. He's still obviously doing his TV show is off the air now on Golf Channel. He doesn't have that show anymore, so he's not getting paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
His profile on the golf broadcast is way down. And I, you know, and of course we talked to him before he did his show at the out in
we broke some news to him too.
I think it was
It was that Phil Mickelson wasn't going to be defending his PGA Championship.
Right, and David didn't know that, which was kind of weird because it had been on. He'd been out for a while.
I think he had just woken up from like a 3-day slumber when he joined
us. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know, I like David. I think he's a good guy and everything, but this is really sort of, you know, they make a big deal out of everybody that they get, but. David's profile as a golf announcer has really gone down in recent years, and you know, he may not want to travel the casino circuit and doing his act there. And who knows how many people they're getting there? I don't know. At each show, it's a bit of a grind to be on tour. So, you know, he's making personal decision. They probably gave him a bunch of money, and. You know, it's a good retirement plan for him. They only have right now 8 events, and next year I think Norman says they're going to have 12, and then eventually 15. And no, who knows if they're going to have a network? We don't know. Maybe they will. They'd have to get Fox to do it because they're the only over-the-air station that doesn't have golf. I don't know that ABC wants to do it. We'll see.
I think
that's another thing. Yeah. We'll see what's going to happen. They're talking to Charles Barkley.
Well, I was just going to say, because you can say what you want about Faraday's profile going down. Charles Barkley,
yeah,
is the most coveted media member in all of sports.
There's no doubt.
And his profile has only gotten bigger and bigger over the years. And this is where some people may draw the line with LIV Golf. When you start to step into, because it's one thing for the casual sports fan who only watches the majors, right? They check in with the majors. LIV Golf really not playing that big of a factor in majors because all of these guys are going and playing in these majors.
Well,
however,
not all of them, but some. Yeah.
However, when you start to step into people's basketball, and I do want to get to the potential that it could step into football as well, that's when your average sports fan, their antenna goes up a little bit. And right now, one of the biggest shows in all of sports is inside the NBA. And even though Charles wants to do both, I have a hard time believing that LIV Golf is going to let him do both. Because I think part of what their deal with Charles is going to be is centered around exclusivity. The only place you're going to be able to get Charles is with LIV Golf.
Yeah. Well, listen, Charles is a basketball expert, mm-hmm, right? I mean, he's great on that show with Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny the Jet.
And Ernie Johnson.
And Ernie Johnson. I mean, that's a great TV show for even people who are casual basketball fans who don't really care what's going on in the NBA. And that's why it's watchable, right? Mm-hmm. He's a great personality, but I mean, and the occasional... when he was on the match with, mm-hmm, Trevor Immelman and, yeah, and the other guys, it's fun to watch him, you know, mm-hmm, once. But if you're talking about, and maybe he would be good as a golf exhibition guy. Now, TNT, correct me if I'm wrong, they broadcast the first couple of rounds of...
of the playoffs. So they get everything up until the finals.
No, but I'm talking about golf.
Oh, for golf.
The golf, they had the first couple of rounds of the British Open, right?
Correct. It was spread across because it was like there. It was on USA.
It was on Peacock. It was USA. Yeah. I'm sorry, USA. So anyway, I get my, you know, whatever. so who knows if TNT would let him do it, right? Are they going to let him do Live Golf? I don't know. I think that Charles...
Or is this the launching pad for... Is that where Live Golf is going to be housed, potentially? And it becomes a package deal with Charles, where he can do both because it's under the same network umbrella.
Right, right. And so who knows, really? But I think if I'm Charles, and if I'm Charles's agent or advisors, I'm saying, look, your deal is basketball. That's really what you're... That's really where you belong, okay? Occasionally, you can go do the match because the match was amateurs, mm-hmm. right? You had the four quarterbacks playing, yeah. and it was terrific. It was really, I thought it was better mm-hmm. than when you had Tiger and Mickelson playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so he could do stuff like that, but I don't know that he doesn't, I don't know. I'm not sure that it would fit. But I don't know that it matters to Norman because I think they're just doing things, you know.
They want names.
They want
Charles
names.
Barkley's
they
a
want,
name. Faraday's a name.
Yeah,
Phil
yeah.
and People DJ are names.
Yeah, they're names. And it's fine. I mean, it's basically a circus, right? It's an exhibition. It's 54 holes. It's a shotgun start. There aren't going to be any world ranking points, and it'll be. It'll survive as it goes, you know, and who knows? We know what the intention is. We know what the purpose is. Will people accept that? You know, maybe. Maybe they watch it. Is it real golf? Is it real legacy golf? Not really.
I think the one thing to consider here is whatever your view of Liv is, I think that a lot of people have speculated, oh, Liv's only got a 3-5 year
nobody
shelf
knows
life, right?
Nobody knows.
That's correct.
Could be 1 year, could be 10 years,
could outlast everything. Who knows how it could,
you know what,
the money's there.
It could if the money's there,
but Charles has said that he only wants to work a handful more years, probably in the neighborhood of 3 or so, and you gotta wonder too, like, is this that cushy final ride off into the sunset? I only want to work 3 more years,
well,
and this may pay me more money to do so,
right,
and I work 14 days out of the year.
Here's the thing. That tour is collecting guys who have names. Their names are not as relevant as they used to be, and maybe when the Saudi leadership figures out that this is kind of like a retirement tour for all these guys. This is like they're cashing in on their names, and it's not as great as we wanted it to be. So who knows? This is the thing. Nobody knows anything. So they're doing, Liv is doing, Norman is doing what he thinks is smart in right now. And just the fact that they're talking to Charles gets them headlines and relevance on social media and in golf media. Oh, wow, they're talking to Charles. In other words, it's not the tournaments that are getting their, you know, oh, wow, there's an upcoming tournament at Bedminster, at Trump's course at Bedminster. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of, oh, wow, Henrik Stenson is going to play there. Okay, well, he played at the British Open, too, and did that make any difference in the scheme
right.
of things? No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, DJ and Bryson finished in the top 10. That's relevant. I mean,
yeah.
that's important, you know, for them
mm-hmm.
because they've got two players who were relevant to all the other players, the PGA Tour players, and in a major. So, and those guys still are exempt for majors for a while.
Right. So would Charles Barkley make you watch Liv Golf? We want to know. 312-332-3776. Is he going to get you to turn on the television or YouTube or whatever platform he's going to be on if he were to join Liv Golf? 312-332-3776. Also, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk had an interesting proposition. Could Liv Golf create a rival league to the NFL? We'll discuss that and hear from Florio when we come back. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with Top Tracer technology.
How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
Here are your hosts, Barry Cronin
and Tyler Rocky.
The segment sponsored by Zero Friction and their new Wheel Pro Golf Bag. So we've been talking a little bit about LIV Golf, and if you missed any of the conversation, check it out on the podcast, ESPN Chicago app, or wherever you get your podcasts. And it looks like LIV is starting to spread its wings a little bit, get outside of golf. You've seen the reports of Charles Barkley potentially getting involved, the Hall of Fame basketball player, and potentially joining their golf broadcast, and he's going to be playing in an upcoming pro-am as well. But Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports threw out the proposition of, should the NFL start to worry about a rival LIV Golf-esque league that could encroach upon them? And the one thing that's always been constant with the NFL is they've had more money than any sort of competitor that comes to play ball with them. This would not be the case anymore if there were to be a Saudi-backed football league. Here's what Mike Florio had to say on his Pro Football Talk show, talking about LIV Golf and if they are, or the LIV style format is a threat to the NFL.
And the biggest weakness for the league is this, the rookie wage scale. The thing that was put in place back in 2011 to hold down the pay that is given to the incoming players. Congratulations, it worked. But you know what it's done? It's created a flaw that could be exploited by a competitor that says, hey, we'll pay twice, three times, four times whatever the NFL is paying on this rookie wage scale, which is non-negotiable. We will do it. The rookie wage scale would evaporate quickly if that kind of a threat shows up for the NFL. And the NFL would try all sorts of other things. And my only point is this. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to work. I'm not rooting for it. I love a good story. And man, a little chaos goes a long way toward creating a good story. I just think that we're all conditioned to the idea that the NFL is never going to face a challenger. When you consider the American appetite for pro football, the fact that legalized gambling will create a greater desire and interest in more forms of football, in more football games on which to bet, especially during football season, there's an opening there. And if the folks who are pursuing relevance for LIV Golf decide that they're going to turn their attention some point to football, and if they can attract some of the top college talent, and if they can maybe pilfer a player whose contract has expired but he's been slapped with the franchise tag, he's not under contract with an NFL team, but his rights are restricted as to who else he can play for, he could jump to this other professional football league. It's just something that I think the NFL would be wise to be thinking about, be very wise to have a plan ready to go, a contingency plan to protect itself, maybe even steps to put in place now to protect itself against that threat. And also, be careful. Tread lightly. Because it's very easy to engage in the kind of practice, the stuff the NFL thinks it's entitled to do. Plenty of the things the NFL does all the time without even thinking about it, I would assume, could potentially become antitrust violations if the NFL is facing a real in-season competitor.
So I found that really interesting because that all of a sudden, I think if you're an NFL player, you want to at least see this be brought to the surface, because whenever these guys go to negotiate their CBAs, they get screwed over in negotiations. I think the best example of that is, why does the franchise tag exist? No player ever wants to play under the franchise tag. It's a lot of money, but it's just 1 year. And you're paid handsomely for that 1 year. But I think for NFL players, you want long-term security. I think you could use this as leverage. The one thing here, though, is approaching, if a LIV-style league were to come up in the NFL, approaching a college football player and taking a college football player to join your league carries a whole lot more weight than getting a college golfer. Because college football is one of the most popular sports in this country, whereas college golf, you're really getting into the weeds in terms of people that actually watch it.
Yeah, golf is a niche sport in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The Saudis have bought, I think they own a franchise in England, soccer,
yeah,
called Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be it's easier for them to buy a franchise, an existing franchise in an existing league, because if you started a new league, could you sign rookies and everything? But then you'd have to find cities where they could play. So, for example, the Bears are going to go to Arlington Heights.
Yeah, in all likelihood.
Soldier Field will be empty. They'll have soccer. So, in Chicago, you could have a place for the LIV football team to play.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, in New York and L.A., for example, could they play at the Coliseum? Would it be, I mean, there's barely enough fans for two franchises in L.A., much less three. New York, maybe. Maybe there would be room for three. But then you'd have to figure out what other cities. Would there be a second franchise in Miami or Tampa Bay or Kansas City? You know what I mean? For them to start their own league, I think, would be more complicated than buying, you know, whoever.
Yeah,
the Jacksonville Jaguars, or pick a team. You know, maybe the guy at Home Depot wants to get out of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Why? How could you blame him with Ryan Pace working for you?
Yeah.
So
I think the one thing that could be interesting, though, is we see like the disgruntled quarterback right now. Like a guy that comes to mind, a couple guys that have come to mind, a guy like Lamar Jackson, a guy like Baker Mayfield. Would the contract negotiations start to stall out? Liv's going to pay me a boatload of money to go over there. Would they be the guys that want to jump over there?
Yeah, it could happen. But, you know, when you're talking about having 50 guys on a roster, it could happen.
The space and logistics, maybe, I think, is fascinating.
It's a little complicated. Yeah. Like with golf,
it's not hard to find a course.
Right, right. Well, and you're poaching individual guys, right? It's hard to build teams, and when you think about the number of players in the NFL, and
you need at least 22. Just if you want to play with no backups, you need 22 guys.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. I think it's.
We'll see. It's certainly
Yeah.
Let's take a phone call here. Mike's in Palos Heights. Mike, welcome on into the CDGA Golf Show.
Hi, good morning, guys. Love the show and watch a lot of golf and follow it pretty closely. In fact, I'm a boomer, so I've seen the arrival of the World Hockey, the ABA, and all of the other upstart leagues that have come up over, you know, the last 30 or 40 years as an adult. And I would just say that in each of those instances, when you go back that far, there was a lot of negativity, and a lot of guys, like when the World Hockey started, they hired guys like Bobby Hall and this guy Ralph Backstrom, and then in the ABA, Dr. J and stuff, to get like some big celebrities to join their leagues. And the thing that I have 2 points. One thing is interesting is that Norman is quite successful in his own right as a financial guy. So, you know, maybe he does have an interesting idea of making this exclusive where it's only on a few times. Like instead of being on, you know, 50 weeks a year and it's just so another golf tournament, maybe he's trying to get that to be something like a major, you know, that would be 1 point. But the other thing I had, which I haven't heard too many people talk about on any of the talk shows when they're talking about this, is I'd like to have you guys comment on this. If this wasn't the Saudis because of all the atrocities that they do, and if this was like, you know, Zuckerberg or Elon Musk or the guy from Amazon that just had a big checkbook and was starting it, what do you guys really – do you think that there would be the same negative
No, there wouldn't be.
Or not?
There wouldn't be.
There wouldn't
it
be.
It wouldn't be.
It'd and, Mike,
be more
we appreciate
like,
the call.
To me, it would be more like the USFL start up against the NFL. The American Football League, you said you're a boomer back in the day when Sonny Werblin paid Joe Namath $400,000, which was an unthinkable amount of money then, and it really made the American Football League, and then they got on NBC, and it was a fun game to watch. They threw the ball a little bit more, and then they wound up merging. That happened, and I think that was just American business going on. This is a different deal. So when you talk about the U.S. Justice Department looking into the antitrust issue now, I don't think that they're going to find the same. It's not equivalent. It's an American business. It's not an American business trying to get anything. This is a different. Yeah. The whole purpose of this is a sports washing issue, and
listen,
we'll see what happens.
Bezos is rich, but the Saudi public investment fund has 4 times the wealth that he.
Well,
has,
and so. It now has 8 times the wealth because gas is $6 a gallon. They're benefiting from. The shortage of gasoline and oil in the U.S. So,
all right, this segment brought to you by Zero Friction, the most innovative products company in golf. We'll hop around the CDGA when we come back on the CDGA Golf Show.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Barry Cronin and Tyler Rocky.
This segment brought to you by X-Golf Downers Grove. Easy access off of I-88 and I-355. Thanks to Kevin Streelman. Thanks to Jake Cantu for producing today. Let's hop around the CDGA real quick, Barry. What do you have for us?
The CDGA runs the Illinois State Amateur. It was at Westmoreland Country Club in Wilmette. Mac McClear of Hinsdale, who will be a senior at Iowa, won the tournament. Tommy Cool of Morton, Illinois, a senior at Illinois, finished second. At Sunset Ridge Country Club in Northfield, the Women's Western Amateur. Taglio Jiravivitaporn of Thailand, they call her JJ, she plays at Iowa State. She defeated Annabelle Pancake of Zionsville, Indiana, who will be a junior at Clemson. 2-1 in match play final yesterday. Several local girls made the match play, top 32, so that was good for them. Doug Gim is currently T3. He's of Arlington Heights, by the way. 13 under par at the 3M Championship in Minneapolis on the PGA Tour. Nick Hardy is T59, so he'll have to have a good Sunday match. So anyway, right. Those are kind of the local things going on, and if you're interested in watching a little good golf right now, turn on the LPGA.
All right, this segment brought to you by X Golf Downers Grove with easy access off of I-88 and I-355. Xander and Hanley coming up at 10.